Most soldiers and families who lived at Kagnu Station in the 1960s and 70s left Ethiopia only hearing about the Eritrean Liberation Front, or the ELF. Few actually experienced their terror, and fewer still had been taken captive by the Shifta, as they were often called. That is, except for two high school students who attended classes at the American school on Track D. They were Brooks Frazier and his teenaged friend Tom Sinonis. Brooks lived off-post in the expat community, and Tom lived on Tract A. They had a first-hand experience with the ELF. They were captured and held, and fortunately, they lived to talk about it. Brooks agreed to be interviewed as he attended the most recent All-Kagnu reunion. In telling us his story, he explained that his father, Samuel, a geologist with Gulf Oil, was stationed in Asmara. His job was to survey the Ethiopian countryside, looking for potential places to drill. On one occasion, Brooks and Tom accompanied the dad on an exploration tour.
We had an early start. And we were far away from the Asmara-Massawa highway that the Italians built. We were driving along trails. And as the day was going by, we knew we needed to start to begin to get on with getting back towards the Massawa direction. So we found that we could make some good progress by getting down into the dry bed of a wadi. And we were making really great progress when suddenly there was a rock outcrop that went from side to side, and we had to creep over that in Land Rover, almost thinking we could not make it. Suddenly, we were surrounded by armed men pointing their guns at us.
It was a heart-stopping surprise. The Land Rover was now under the control of 8 heavily armed, unfriendly men, rifles pointed directly at them. What's worse, the explorers were not being tracked by the military or other American forces, and they could not be seen from the nearby Asmara-Massawa highway. The group was at the mercy of their ELF captors. The ELF, however, had a leader, and he took over.
He directed us immediately to this dome-shaped bush, a large bush, and he had us stand tightly right together facing these 8 men with guns pointing right at us. I thought, gosh, they could shoot us right here and there, because we were lined up with guns pointing at us.
Certainly you were afraid.
I was afraid. From that group of rebels, one approached us. He approached us and he reached his hand past us into the bush, opening a door built into the bush, opened it up, they ordered us into the bush.
It turned out, however, to be a temporary holding cell, as rebels discussed what to do with their unexpected guests. A short time later, the group was told to move and trek down a path into a narrow canyon.
Walking down that tight canyon, I could see other insurgents along the high rim, and suddenly this canyon opened into a beautiful basin about the size of a football field, full of bushes and trees, unusual in that part of that lowlands. And we could see groups of men all around realizing we had happened upon an ELF base.
The ELF was dug in, well supplied, and organized. It was, in essence, an occupied valley, but one unknown to authorities and one hostile to outside interests. The teenaged Brooks, his buddy Tom, and the others were, to use a biblical phrase, sore afraid.
This was a surprise catch. So knowing that is what formed my father's first approach.
And what was that?
He's a tall and imposing man, and he had been an officer in the Second World War. He suddenly stood fully upright, and he caught everybody's attention because he looked slowly 360 degrees all the way around, turning around, ended up facing this this officer.
But something unusual was about to unfold, and Brooks gives full credit to his father, Samuel, who had spent time prospecting in three African countries and was familiar with their ways and also their religions. In this part of Eritrea, the Muslim faith dominated culture, and Mr. Fraser knew how critical hospitality was to Muslims.
He looked at him with an inquisitive expression, and he says, "Well, sir, where's the chai?"
Chai, or tea, was indeed served. Mr. Fraser and the officer, who turned out to be a propaganda officer, sat on rocks, calmly talking. But calamity soon reigned. An Ethiopian spotter plane was seen approaching, looking for rebel action below, and the entire camp immediately scrambled and took cover. But it flew by, and it kept on flying.
So there came a point where my father took the most bold move of all. Right after we were allowed to get up and things started to come back to normal, as soon as that airplane went past us and it didn't seem like they saw anything was amiss, we all stayed still, and there was an okay call from the high lookout. And once everything started to get back to motion, my father went right up to that officer, calling him by his name, and he said, "Lieutenant Abrechet, it's incredible to see how well-trained your men are under conditions like this. It would be my greatest honor if you would allow me to inspect your troops."
And that's what he did. A superior officer standing at attention, walking up and down a rank of soldiers, staring into their faces, examining what passed as their uniforms, but an American doing the inspecting. There is no known incident like it. And it unsettled the rebel troops, who clearly did not understand what was going on.
And then my father stood back, looked at that soldier, nodded his head, and said, "Well done, soldier." Stood back and gave him a salute.
Oh, my.
And he said, "These troops are very disciplined."
It was the moment the geology party had waited for. Mr. Fraser turned and began leading the party back to the Land Rover. But the rebels had not relented. They wanted the party's land maps and field-grade binoculars, and of course they wanted money, which Mr. Fraser humbly presented to them as gifts, thus showing respect and deference. However, Samuel Fraser demanded receipts, which a rebel scribe duly made out. The party then regained their vehicle, but the end still hadn't come.
We were surrounded by the soldiers again. It's like back in deep kimchi again. You know, it looked bad. And when that officer came to the open window to where my dad was sitting, my father said, "Lieutenant Abrechet, I want to thank you again for your extreme hospitality and good treatment of my team. Thank you." Then from his shirt, he took his favorite gold cross pin that Gulf Oil Management had given to him for his seniority. And he said, "Lieutenant, this is my gift to you for your fine treatment of my team. Thank you, and may we meet again." And with that, he rolled up his window in front of that officer. He said, "Berhani Drive." And Berhani got off, found firm ground, and as it would happen, we rounded a nearby bend. They did not force us to stop again, and as soon as we rounded that bend, Berhani stepped on the acceleration down that dry river body, driving as fast as we could until night fell upon us.
Brooks, his friend Tom Sinonis, Samuel Fraser, and the driver Berhani ended this day alive and well, having skirted a treacherous episode that could have easily ended in captivity, further imprisonment, and potentially in death. Instead, they slept in their normal beds, keeping as souvenirs of a sort the receipts that Mr. Fraser demanded from the rebels, for reporting purposes, he said, showing the gifts of land maps, field binoculars, and money. There was no time, however, to obtain a receipt for the Gold Cross pen. It's been more than 50 years since this incident occurred. Eritrea is now its own independent country, and Brooks Frazier and his wife are living in Houston. Quite soon, he says, he'll detail more about this incident in a book that he is writing, which will contain a copy of one of the receipts the ELF gave Samuel Frazier on that day. This is Daniel Minchin, a CAGNU vet, 1969 to 1971.